And there was so much enthusiasm on both sides to try to find a way of making things easy, quick, and reproducible. And that ended in inappropriate results.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast Season 3. I'm really excited about this. I've been mulling over doing a third season, and I think it's necessary. It's necessary to approach what I think is in terms of coming back to the basics and hybrid rhinoplasty. How are we going to incorporate the wave of preservation with structural rhinoplasty, with endonasal rhinoplasty? And I'm delighted to be in Brussels today at the European Rhinoplasty Course, and as my first guest on the rhinoplasty this season. I couldn't think of someone who is better positioned to talk about this than Professor Enrico Rapati. So, Prof. Enrico, thank you so much
for today. It's a pleasure.
So, Prof, there's a lot to chat about. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah?
Yes.
Working so hard. Like,
working hard and working very hard on interesting cases and thinking a lot. And just loving what we do. Sorry for my voice. It's low because I just come from my air conditioning room. So
tell me, how do you manage to keep a balance between the amount of academics you're doing, the amount of work you're doing, the amount of conferences, etc.? Because this podcast is listened to in like 70 countries around. And so many people look up to you. One question is, where do you get your energy from to carry on doing what you do?
It's okay, loving what you do. It's as simple as that. You and trying to cut some corners out, trying to avoid unnecessary times of your positive life, delegating to some extent. I have a very good assistant, Francesco, who's been here a long time.
Yeah.
I have one fellow from my fellowship. I have two residents, and it's kind of huge for guests and gain, I guess. They're deriving surely something, and I rely on them for some portions of the work which are less, in which they can be involved a little bit less directly.
Yeah.
So a reasonable way of delegating some items.
Yeah.
It's not easy to find a balance. It's not easy to find a balance. Of course, that it's a family issue. It's a personal health issue.
Yeah.
I like to exercise when I can, and biking and other things. It's a delicate equilibrium. And you know, you're also like me, to react and stuff. Still, I think I can make it. Probably the biggest decision regarding this was when I left my hospital responsibilities, which were becoming a little bit taking too much on.
So, Prof, before we come into this, the kind of fee for the season is a little glimpse of how, tell us, how did you end up where you're on? To a history of where you started, you specialized in, etc.
It's funny because I was talking to this with my wife just before leaving for training. Sometimes I think I led a double life, two separate lives. So I've always been attracted by the surgical field.
Yes.
And plastic surgery is what I just got in love with. I was in the UK every year, 2 or 3 months. So when I was a medical student, I went around surgical departments, medical departments, and just I saw it. I was made for surgery.
Yes.
Starting with orthopedics and found plastics, and then that was kind of my thing. So following that, I was very lucky. I went to the States. Long story, and I was there for quite a long time, 3 years about that. And I was very fortunate. I got a department in Italy, which is not easy, when I'm so young. So I was 37 when I started, because 39 and I became full chief and 37 acting chief. And so I loved that thing. I mean, I just loved it.
Yeah.
Why? Because for them, I'm not an artist, for instance. I should be, but I never found the time to cultivate this.
Yeah.
But I love studying, I love developing algorithms. I love physics in school, for instance. I love like mathematics as well. drawing. I never had time to dwell on it, but maybe I would have liked it. And surgery gave me that shock that general medicine did not give me. I mean, then internship in gastroenterology, and I said, I have to go back to just give mess.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say, I did not.
None.
Did not find excessively enthusiastic. And surgery was that beautiful interface between the manual dexterity, shaping something from the wrong end, and developing a lovely plan which could be so multifaceted.
Yes.
So developing that plan and then putting it into practice was one of them. And plastic surgery was the thing.
Yes.
Facial surgery. From
yeah.
And so from there, I developed, I was lucky, I got to be have this department, and I just loved what I did for years, 21 years.
Wow.
During that time, progressively, I did kind of everything. I did the lower extremity, upper lower extremity, free flash, pressure sores, up of hand.
Yeah.
Not many burns because it's kind of something I shied away with, and not much congenital. But at some point, face became more and more interesting because of the finesse.
Yes.
I liked doing micro and then these little anastomosis things. I was playing with my noobs. I was trying to play even 4.5 to do some head and neck stuff. And then nose came to follow.
Yeah.
And the way that nose started was that I was planning a meeting on nasal reconstruction.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, the same thing happened in the States and somewhere, maybe talking of maybe 15 years ago. And they said, well, now let's start meeting on rhinoplasty, which probably combines nasal reconstruction and shape. And then I got progressively just loving it. So we did a lot of flaps. We had a big unit doing so many flaps from nose, for the face, had a huge face lock, big bin. And so from that came the aesthetic point. And then I said, why don't I just learn something from others like ENTs?
Yes.
Because I knew not enough about function. So it became less and less specialty oriented and more or less focused on doing doses.
Yes.
That's when the point happened that can I still work equally well in my department or should I focus? And I had a transition.
Wow.
So now I'm leaving and living my second life, which is having left. With some regret, but inevitably my hospital's disabilities.
Yeah.
And then just having devoted myself to work completely over the last 7 years and considerably. So it's a kind of essentially loving what you do.
Yes.
Why do you love it? I think it's just an attraction.
Yeah.
You find it challenging, you find it rewarding. Teaching next means a lot.
Yeah.
Every time I teach something, I have a mind in front of me and I learn. I mean, I learn so much in this week already.
Yeah. But that it's the next listeners know it, but a couple of like 2 years ago of COVID, etc., we were interviewing a lot of the top overseas guys. And out of everybody, every day I did a program, you'd send me a message and say, Cameron, give me the login details. I want to listen to that message because I was busy operating and saying, this is a guy who he runs Bergamo. And yet he's listening and learning. And I think that journey is incredible.
But, Malcolm, I was so kind of not attracted by some colleagues of mine, maybe professors, or they just come for their talk, say hello, make some social, and then leave a meeting. Lost them. You have to benchmark, not only for the role, judging your results, but you have to learn from others because minds can be rude quite a lot.
Yeah.
You are losing a tremendous chance if you don't do that.
Absolutely.
So it's a matter of time, but that portion, I still want to listen to webinars I have recorded last
year. Yeah.
But they want to listen to them because they will learn.
Absolutely.
Mind has to be after.
Yeah. So, Prof, the other thing I wanted to kind of get my head around. So, one of the things I've noticed over all the years of watching is, you don't suffer fools gladly at the same time. You call someone out, it's not scientific. Let's just capture what the reef is. So leading on that, there's been a resurgence of preservation. And we're now sitting in kind of a new era in rhinoplasty, where if someone wants to start this career, so much confusion, which way to go, blah, blah, blah. I think you are perhaps trying to show the guts. Listen, this is the way to do it. So I'm really interested to hear what your thoughts are on.
Well, it's an old story, but the motto of the last Bergamo guillotine was find the way. Yes. And the icon was a kind of ladder within which people were not finding the way. This preservation, great wave didn't unfortunately simplify choices.
Yes.
And didn't allow people to just go straight away for a more simplified version of rhinoplasty. If they thought they would, then they failed. Mm. Because it's not easy to understand as well as to practice. As I mentioned today, because it's one of my, I have really two things greatly going on in these last years. One is secondary retraction of rib, which I just love. Mm. And the other one is trying to understand what is good from preservation.
Yes.
And there's so much would come from
absolutely. Yeah.
And the new anatomy, all the work that has been done by Rowling, by Peter and by others, and the new concepts of what this new anatomy understanding leads to clinical, but at the same time, then it became a market niche. And there was so much enthusiasm on both sides to try to find a way of making things easy, quick, and reproducible. And that ended in inappropriate results.
Yeah.
Without any tailoring of a nose to some of this face, you cannot do that.
Yeah.
And to a number of issues, which were due to lack of time and lack of precision and whatever. So my current thinking, sorry for me, was my current thinking is I'm trying to blend. I still need to see what I do, so that's why I'm open my noses. But I treasure so much from the preservation regarding tissue plans, respect or restoration of some ligaments, and still being structural with my tip, but preservationist to this element of your dorsum, this dorsal distal area, which is so difficult to reconstruct.
Yeah.
Now, I had a lot of issues with Roman's editorial because they weren't the structure, and I had issues with bodies as well, and then we came to terms. Initially, preservation was a real block against block.
Yes.
Structural preservation, in fact, there's no reason. We can find a way. One can be purely structural, one can be purely preservationist. And I found this hybrid concept absolutely interesting.
Yes. Our profit's great time. It's really, I think it's going to be a really interesting future for rhinoplasty over the next few years.
Well, pendulum swims, right?
Yes.
If I was wise, I would say probably, why am I leaving the known shore to just advance my stuffing down overseas?
Yeah.
But as I said, I assume this that if you're curious, if you study things, then there's value. And currently, I don't regret. I've taken so many things recently. It's changed the quality of my life.
Definitely. That's gratifying. Well, Prof, thanks. Thank you so much. It's just that we want to kick off the season with a bang. And it's just thank you for what you've done for rhinoplasty around the world and how like big I'm meeting. What it's done is just, it's really wonderful.
Oh, well, we love sharing. I think sharing is so important. It's easy to see this problem. You are just enthusiastic. You want to share. You want to teach. You want to learn. You just give this with your heart. It's easy.
But that's easy. And the RAC, I mean, what a great society.
Well, RAC is beyond that from little thing.
Yeah.
No, it's offering lots of things, especially in the fellowship.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's a new domain.
Yeah. Well, Prof, thank you so much. And to all the listeners out there, thank you for listening. And guys, we really hope that you can enjoy season 3 of the Rhino Blaster podcast. It's going to be a crack.